Good morning, Your Honors. Howard Crystal for the appellant. Your Honors, this case concerns whether a FOIA plaintiff is eligible to recover any attorney's fees in a case where it obtained several court-ordered changes in the party's legal relationship. I'd like to start with the court's order granting summary judgment to the plaintiff, denying summary judgment to the agency, and finding that the agency had not met its burden of proof in demonstrating that several FOIA exemptions applied. The district court's view was that because the agency had an obligation under the FOIA to meet its burden of proof both before and after the district court's order, the court's order did not change the party's legal relationship. That view of the FOIA is both inconsistent with the Buchanan catalyst theory line of cases and also with this court's FOIA principles and with the underlying FOIA provision within the Freedom of Information Act entitling a plaintiff to attorney's fees. The court's order had the effect and, in fact, led to, in this case, as it does in all cases, to the release of records to the plaintiff because the court determined that under the original Vaughan Index submitted by the FDA, that the agency had not met its burden of proof. And the clear result of that order was that the agency had to go back and meet its burden of proof, which again changed the party's legal relationship. The government argues that the test should be whether or not the party's legal obligation has changed. But of course, courts don't rule as to parties whether the party's legal obligation, the court doesn't rule as to whether or not there's a change in the underlying legal obligation. The court rules as to whether or not the agency has complied with the legal obligation. Before the court's order in this case, the government's position was, we will not give you any more documents. We believe that our Vaughan Index adequately meets our burden of proof.
The summary judgment order in 2002.
Yes, Your Honor.
That orders the government to provide a better Vaughan Index, right?
That's right, Your Honor. Okay. It found...
How is that different from an order in discovery saying that a party's responses to discovery have been inadequate and that it must provide better answers?
I think the answer, Your Honor, there's several answers to that. The first of which, of course, this was a summary judgment disposition. It was not an interim order. But I think the more important answer...
you probably know that there's at least one case in the Third Circuit that classifies a Vaughan Index order as the equivalent of a discovery order.
And I appreciate that, Your Honor. I don't think this court has issued that ruling. But I think the more important consideration here, Your Honor, is this court created the Vaughan Index procedure because it recognized... Different from the discovery context, it recognized that in the FOIA context, the plaintiff is at a severe, and the court is at a severe disadvantage
That's the principle of discovery, too.
Yes, exactly, Your Honor. But again, the underlying statute here, authorizes the district court to order the release of non-exempt records. The district court here could have, and other district courts have in certain circumstances, in response to inadequate Vaughan indices, ordered the release of records. And here what happened was the court elected to give the government an opportunity to change its Vaughan index because the court found that the agency had not met its burden of proof. And what happened as a result of that is inexorably what always happens, which is that the plaintiffs obtained records. So again,
maybe all kinds of arguments about legal classification I recognize, but functionally a Vaughan index seems to me a discovery device with the special characteristic that its terms were originally created by this court rather than by the federal rules of civil procedure.
Well,
it forces the party with access to superior information to provide the information, including character of its own position, which is one of the things you can look for in discovery, to the side which doesn't have access, starts the ball game without access to those things.
I understand the court's concern. Two responses. One, going back to Your Honor's reference to the Third Circuit case, I think one question the court would have to consider under that paradigm is whether or not that summary judgment disposition was an appealable order. In our view...
That's the Third Circuit.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly right, Your Honor. In our view, if the federal government had chosen to come to the Court of Appeals and say, the district court got it wrong, our Vaughan Index is adequate, we think that there's no serious question that under this circuit's precedence that this court would take review of that.
I mean, do you have something?
Well, not under the FOIA, Your Honor. No, I don't. I don't think that issue has squarely been resolved.
Generally, we only allow appeal of discovery orders, interlocutory appeal of discovery orders, if the enforcement of the order will let the cat out of the bag.
That's right, Your Honor. But as Your Honor does know, there are, I think the way to answer your question is that particular question has never been teed up. But as your Honor knows, there are a number of cases in this circuit that have explicated on the Vaughan Index requirements that have helped to explain what's required. The reason those cases have been before this court is because in various cases, the government has appealed district court determinations about whether or not they're required to release documents under standards set by the district court.
Right, but those relate to release of documents. It's clearly appealable as long as the litigation is otherwise wiped out.
Again, to frame the potential appeal question, if the government had come to this court, what they would have said is, absent immediate review from this court, when we go back and apply the standards set by Judge Urbina, we're going to have to release documents because we will have to go back. And Judge Urbina said, this conclusory description of what FOIA Exemption 4 covers is not sufficient. Well, what happened in this case, again, as what happens in all cases,
The government would have to show that Judge Urbina's Vaughan Index order was so erroneous that it essentially would force the government to release information that in fact was exempt.
Right. Right? I think
anything
that's
short of that, I think we'd say, sorry, wait till this is over.
But again, Your Honor, that's exactly what happened in this case. The government released almost 1,000 records in response to the district court's order for a better Vaughan Index. They didn't just go back and...
If the question is whether a Vaughan Index is a powerful tool for disgorging documents, I 100% agree with you. Like discovery in that respect. Like discovery.
Yeah, Your Honor, again, the government's paradigm here and the way the court analyzed this was under the Buchanan principle, which rejected the earlier catalyst theory, of course, which had said that you could, if you file a lawsuit and get documents, you're entitled to fees. We know that's not the case anymore. This is a case about, or the question is, when the court has issued an order, here it was a summary judgment order. I understand the court's discovery concern, but it wasn't an order sort of ancillary to the underlying litigation. Of course, a discovery order were concerned to dispute about money damages or about some kind of injunctive relief. What you get in discovery are documents that may help you prove your case. Here the case is about the documents. The order that the court issued was for a better index, which led inexorably, as it always does, to the release of the underlying relief that the plaintiffs were seeking, which was release of the documents and, of course, inadequate justification.
Purposes, but to me, the reasonable an index, compulsion of an index leads to the release of documents is that it exposes frailties in the government's claims, just as discovery often will expose frailty in the discovered party's claims or defenses.
I guess what I'm trying to suggest, Your Honor,
like expediting, requiring the government to expedite the release of documents may expose. And in Edmonds, we said that was justified.
That's correct, Your Honor. In the Edmonds case and also in the Davey case where there was a court-ordered agreement for the processing of records and the release of records, the court said that kind of an order, because it changes the party's relationship and the result of it is that the party gets documents, that is sufficient for prevailing party purposes. I'd just like to really briefly touch on the second order.
It sounds like the heart of what you're saying in response to Judge Williams is that the FOIA cause of action is about the release of documents, so it's unfair to equate it with discovery, which is not the cause. Discovery is a tool to be used in connection with litigation. It's not the cause of action. You don't have a cause of action in discovery, but you do have a cause of action here under FOIA to get the release of documents. So the equation, I think the equation is suspect. That's what I'm hearing you say.
I of course, completely agree, Your Honor. You've said it much better than I was saying it. That's exactly right.
You should have heard him yesterday.
I'd just like to, I'll reserve the rest of my time.
The December 4 order is not in front of us, is that right?
December
4, 2001 order.
Well, we believe it is, Your Honor. I mean, we didn't press this in the district court because we thought it was subsumed.
And just a moment ago, you said the second order I'll refer to. So I took it that means you're not going
to. No, I'm sorry. I didn't think I was going to have time to talk about that one. But if I could just quickly, just to be clear, at JA 33, Joint Appendix 33, we have referred the court to an earlier scheduling order in the case, which clearly meets all of the tests under Davey. There's no dispute because the court specifically said defendant's release of documents related to the Vaughn edicts is due on December 17, 2001. Now, we brought this up in our opening brief. The government hasn't said anything about it. Mm-hmm. We do, but this is sort of a fallback argument for us. We, of course, believe the Vaughn index order subsumes this earlier scheduling order. If for any reason the court were to disagree, we do think that this order unambiguously both orders of Vaughn index and orders the release of records. And then finally, just to say a quick word as to the other order I was going to refer to at the end of the case, the court again unambiguously ordered the government to release records. And we believe that is also a basis for a recovery of attorney's fees under the FOIA provision. Thank you.
May it please the court. Good morning, Alan Birch for the government. In a case like this one involving a sample Vaughn index, a government agency couldn't prevail any more thoroughly than it did in the final judgment in this case. The district court here upheld all of.
Completely, if the district judge hadn't tacked on the last sentence, right?
Not in a sample Vaughn case, Your Honor. That's not in a sample Vaughn index case. That's the key point here to be considered.
I'm talking about the 04 order.
The September 04 order that said, directing the agency to resume processing and release the non-exempt documents in the remaining drug trials.
Right.
That's an inevitable aspect of a sample Vaughn case, where the court, by definition, has not ruled on all of the documents at issue, but it's ruled only on a sample. That's what the sample Vaughn accomplishes. It gets to the same point by using a sample, which is then extrapolated to the remaining universe of responsive documents.
District court had gone your way, what would have happened in that case?
The district court, in final judgment, went our way.
I mean, at the point where there was a fight over whether your one index was adequate, if you had prevailed, what would have happened?
Are you referring to the September 2002 order, Your Honor, the earlier order, or the September 2004 order?
The first fight over whether or not
the Vaughn index was adequate?
Right.
If the court had found that Vaughn index adequate, the court would have then proceeded to the merits of the exemptions and presumably made a ruling as to whether the agency was entitled to claim those exemptions or not. The district court made explicitly clear in that order that it was not reaching the merits, however, that it was simply rejecting the Vaughn index as inadequate to make any sort of determination whatsoever. Indeed, the district court's characterization on page 164 of the order is like a teacher returning a paper to a student for revision prior to assigning a grade. The court returned the Vaughn index to the FDA for revision prior to ruling on the merits.
It seems to me the problem, the big problem, at least in my mind, that you have here, which I think frames the case up quite well, what the district court's thinking. The court's saying the 2002 order preserves the status quo because it required the FDA to do something it was already required to do, namely produce a suitable Vaughn index. That's not the law. That's, respectfully, that's absurd. We always, when a district court issues an order, it's not about changing the law. It's normally about enforcing the law, compelling a party to do what they're required to do. That's not maintaining the status quo. The notion that maintains the status quo because the law is part of the status quo, and now we've told you you're part of that status quo, too. I don't know where that comes from. No court has ever said that.
Well, perhaps on a metaphysical level, that's correct, Your Honor. But if you compare the case to Okaw and Davis, where you see that in OCA, for example, the court ordered the agency to redo its search. The agency thought it had already completed an adequate search. And in Davis, the agency thought it had already completed adequate segregation analysis. And in both of the court said, no, you have to go back and redo it. But in both of those cases, this court found that was not a material change in the legal relationship under OCA and Buchanan.
Possibly because it was just procedural in the court's mind.
It's hard to see how the Vaughan Index would be less procedural, Your Honor. That's what tees up the case for adjudication.
From Edmonds.
Well, there was a statutory cause of action in Edmonds that the plaintiff had, expedited processing, that the plaintiff won, and there were, as a result of that, date certain requirements to turn over particular documents. There was never any other such requirement in this case.
Well, there's a Vaughan requirement.
There is a Vaughan requirement.
It, and they won.
Initially, yes, Your Honor, but then on the final judgment, keep in mind that OCAR requires that the substance of that they receive some relief in the form of either a consent decree or a final judgment on the merits. And the final judgment on the merits was the 2004 order, not the 2002 order. So the 2002 order can only be described in this context as an interim procedural order. Indeed, that's consistent with the language in Davey that is distinguishing OCA, and it is saying that it was merely, that is at 456 F3rd 165.
You made an effort in your brief at page 10 to distinguish Davey with respect to the 04 order, and I did not think that was successful. But if you say at the bottom of page 10, required the agency to produce responsive documents, then you add, not in quotes, without regard to any claims of exemption that might exist, and I see nothing in Davey that does that.
But Davey did not. I mean, the consent decree in Davey did not effectively foreclose the agency's ability to determine which documents were subject to exemption or not. It said turn over particular documents, all responsive documents. It did not. The agency did not preserve the right to claim any exemptions or to determine what documents were entitled to particular exemptions. And in this case, that's exactly what happened.
Interesting constructional point. The court says at the top of page 166, it is almost indistinguishable from Edmonds over there, which required the FBI to provide plaintiff with all documents as to which no exemptions be claimed. Now, the Davey court, which we happily have a member here to tell us what was really
remember it well.
Yes, remember it well. Although the next
the Davey order is the equivalent.
Well, the court continues there to
really the equivalent. Then it,
if I may, Your Honor, the court
left open exemptions.
The court decision in Davey continues to in the next few sentences to emphasize the importance of a date certain requirement, and indeed the date certain existence of a date certain requirement relative to particular language infuses both Davey and Edmonds. Excuse me?
You have a date certain in the 04 order.
Not with respect to any particular. What is the. I don't read it that way, Your Honor. It says you must now resume processing of the documents. The 04 order at the very end. I'm looking at page 109 of the appendix, the memorandum opinion. It says this time has now arrived. INDG is representative. FDA must now disclose all records. It's the last sentence of the opinion.
Well, I guess it turns on the meaning of the word now.
Well, now the agency is to resume the processing that it had proposed all along as a part of the sample lawn process. Again, that is the core to understanding this case, is the aspect of the mechanics of the sample lawn process. The agency had made it crystal clear at this point that it had only processed one IND. It had not even begun to gather and process the other documents, the other hundreds of thousands of pages of documents, because it would be simply wasteful to go through that process in the absence of a ruling on the sample Vaughn index. And that is why the agency resumed that processing after the ruling and released the responsive documents consistent with the sample Vaughn process. Indeed, it took, I think, over a year to complete the production after that, as evidenced by the briefing below of the motion to compel, which was also denied. The sample Vaughn process that was approved by the court in the 2004 order is exactly what the agency asked for. The agency could not have prevailed any more thoroughly than it did. There was simply no relief, nothing left, no relief on the merits accorded to the plaintiff. Now, the only error I would point out in the district court's analysis on that point is page 165 of the appendix, where it talks about the, at the bottom, 165, the last paragraph begins the disputed sentence, again, referring to the order to resume production. The court says it does not make a prevailing plaintiff a prevailing party because the sentence does not resolve a contested issue between the parties. That's irrelevant. I think it's also factually incorrect. I mean, the plaintiff and the defendant did dispute whether there should be a Vaughn index in the process. That was resolved earlier in the case. Whether or not it's disputed is not as important as if you turn the page to 166, and it explains that the timeline proposed by the defendant in the 2001 summary judgment motion, from that the court extrapolated from its ruling on the sample IND to the remaining 18 INDs. That is what explains the language in the order requiring the agency to resume processing of the other 18 INDs. This is exactly what the agency wanted. The agency prevailed completely. There's simply no room.
I'm really bothered by what the trial court stated as the test for determining the question here. That is, the order preserved the status quo because it required the government to do something it was already required to do in the law. What's the authority for that?
Yeah, I don't believe that's the correct formulation of the test either.
Wrong.
But that doesn't lead to a different analysis.
That even though we acknowledge that's an incorrect statement of the law, you nonetheless prevail in what you think is a correct statement of the law? That's surely not a correct statement of the law.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe that's right. I would say that the correct statement of the law is what's in Okaw and Buchanan about the material alteration in a legal relationship of the parties, as evidenced by relief on the merits in either a final judgment or a consent decree. There's no consent decree in this case. The only option is a final judgment on the merits, and that would be the September 2004 order. And the only language in there that even arguably gives the plaintiff a crumb is the inevitable byproduct of the sample Vaughn process. The agency prevailed 100% on that. There is no room for any argument that the plaintiff substantially prevailed. With that, we request that the judgment below be affirmed. Thank you.
How much time? Give you 1 minute.
1 minute. Thank you, Your Honor. Very briefly, Judge Williams, you were talking about the, relationship between the Okaw case, which talked about the interim nature of the relief versus the Davey case. And that relates back to your discovery question earlier, which I just wanted to respond to again briefly. The court in this case, the government in this case, did not submit a Vaughn index at an earlier procedural step. The government moved for summary judgment. They rested their case. They said this case is over based on the Vaughn index. So it was not an interim step. Based on the Vaughn index, the government said summary judgment should be entered in our favor.
Right.
And the court found that the government had not met its burden of proof. I was just, a further point is.
I was trying to ask before, and this is preceding the 2002 or
This was the 2002 order, entering summary judgment for plaintiffs, denying it for the government, rejecting.
But their procedural process was the case is over.
Yes, that's exactly right, Your Honor.
That's not what they said.
They moved for summary.
I know there was a move for summary judgment. They were suggesting that there would still be more to be done.
I disagree with that, Your Honor.
Said I'll go back and look at that. My recollection was that the government wanted the case over in 2002, and what would have followed would have been an appeal by you.
I believe that's how we read the record, Your Honor. That's certainly how we think it would have proceeded. We don't understand how it could have proceeded otherwise.
Let me give you a really, I think it's a simple hypothetical. Let's have a negligence case, and the defendant makes a motion for summary judgment. And the court says, no, denied. You haven't over a reasonable jury on the basis of this record could find the plaintiff. Time passes, more discovery, and the defendant makes a second motion for summary judgment. And the court grants that summary judgment. End of case. Okay. So we've had a summary judgment denied, and then a summary judgment for the same party lost on the first round, granted. Under Buchanan, is that the correct pronunciation?
I never understood.
Is that that's a win for the losing party?
No, I don't think so, Your Honor. I think it's the difference between that case and this case, for two important differences. One is the court entered summary judgment for the plaintiff. He didn't just deny summary judgment for the government. He entered partial summary judgment for the plaintiff on the grounds that the government had not met its burden of proof. And two, that's what the court did. That's what the court did.
What does it mean?
Well, what it meant.
How does it add anything except words? The court denied the government's motion and ordered a better Vaughan index.
I think that leads to my second point into the distinctions, which is that. Again, what happened in this case, and is what always happens, is when the government goes back and tries to meet its burden of proof, it releases records to the plaintiff, which is the ultimate relief the plaintiff seeks in the case. And that also distinguishes it fully from your hypothetical, Your Honor, in our view. If I could just make one other quick point, the government mentioned the Davis case. In the Davis case, the court ordered no relief in the plaintiff's favor, so there was no basis for an award. And in the Okaw case, just very quickly, the court specifically said, distinguished other cases by saying, the court in that case, the district court, had not disallowed any of the government's exemptions. Here, the court disallowed the exemptions. It found that the government had not met its burden of proof. And then finally, with regard to the final order that Your Honor, Judge Williams asked about, two points. One, the court did resolve a dispute, and we refer you to our briefs on that point. I don't want to take the court's time to explain that.
Because what the court says there is that what the plaintiff explains it really meant by immediately was after the conclusion of the motions for summary judgment.
The dispute that the court resolved was that there were interveners in the case, the biomedical companies. And the government's position in the final summary judgment disposition was that once the representative sample Vaughan index is resolved, the next phase of the case should be for the companies to have a chance to convince us, the FDA, that actually we're going to take a different approach with regard to company X than we took with regard to company Y. We responded and said, that was the whole reason we objected to the sample Vaughan index. The government's position originally was the same similar in kind documents would be released as to all INDs, and the court should issue a final order making clear that the similar in kind documents must be released. That's what the court did. The court rejected the government's argument that the companies would have an opportunity to argue that a different decision would be made about exemptions at the end of the case. So a dispute was resolved in our favor. And finally, with regard to the time issue, I'd refer, Your Honor, to your opinion in the Bodman case, where there was no deadline. We submitted this in a 28J letter earlier this week. There was no deadline, and in fact, there was no resolution of exactly how much money was going to be awarded. But I think the court called it thin gruel for prevailing party status, but nonetheless, the court found it enough for prevailing party status. The fact that there was no deadline in this case does not take away the plaintiff's status as prevailing parties. Thank you.
Thank you, Giverette. Case is submitted.